Well, it's that time of year. God has given us His fall holy days. And now, for the next couple of months, the other guy comes forward with his counterfeit holidays. So I have a sort of a reminder message today. When I was getting ready to go to the feast, it was about the day before, actually the Friday before the feast, getting ready to go to Jekyll Island, and I was listening to the radio, and I heard, this was, of course, we're talking back in September already, and the guy said, well, the Fright Fest starts at Six Flags this weekend, and Netherworld will not be too far long in opening after that. I don't know if you know what Netherworld is. It's one of the newer, fancier haunted house type attractions that usually are open up for the whole month of October, leading up, of course, to Halloween. And it is rated as one of the top three in the whole country, and it's in the Atlanta area. I remember back in the early 70s when we had the church congregation in Valdosta, and Mr. Gore was the pastor there, Bruce Gore, whom most of you know. And it was around Christmas time, so he had done a sermon on the pagan aspects of these worldly holidays. And the next week he told us that on the way home, as they were driving through Valdosta, going up toward the Macon congregation, that one of his daughters looked out the window and saw all the Christmas decorations and said, "Look at all that paganism!" And then she stopped and thought a minute and said, "It sure is pretty paganism." So it has its allures and it has its attractions. Sometimes I found myself wondering, how did such a weird holiday as Halloween get into the calendar? It's not exactly a worship holiday in the United States, unlike Christmas and Easter, which, of course, use all sorts of pagan symbols and pagan rituals to worship Jesus Christ. Halloween is not exactly that sort of a holiday. Most of the things associated with it, the symbols, the rituals, the customs, come from ancient, mostly Celtic traditions, pagan Celtic religious traditions, versions of which were brought here mainly by the Irish in the 1800s. And of course, as we got toward 1900 into the teens and the 20s, people had more money, they had more time, work days got shorter, they had cars, they could drive around and move around, and people began doing more of these customs. And by the 1920s, especially around Halloween, you began to have situations where teenagers, people in their young 20s, 10, 11, 12-year-old kids, would basically run wild. They would run amok, and the trick-or-treat type things got out of hand. It became more trick than treat. They were doing serious vandalism, I mean major property destruction, and even setting whole neighborhoods on fire in some cases. And people began to wonder, how are we going to rein this in? There were beginning to be murders and assaults. All sorts of crazy things were going on leading up to Halloween night, especially on October 31st. So the communities decided, especially in the big cities in the Midwest, like Minneapolis and St. Louis and Detroit and Chicago, Kansas City, Indianapolis, just, on and on. What are we going to do? How are we going to rein this in? So they decided to get the churches involved. And the churches, of course, they didn't go to the Bible and say, "God says don't do this. This is demonism. This is paganism. And God hates this sort of thing." They said, "Why don't we organize it? Why don't we tame it down? They're going to do it anyway, so let's turn it into an innocuous, fun festival. And the churches took the lead in turning Halloween into what most of us who did not grow up in the church remember as a kid. You know, where you'd get the little costume and your parents would get you all together, and you'd go in groups of kids from the whole neighborhood and go all over through the neighborhood in different areas, and somebody go up to the house, knock on the door, and some kid with everybody in a little chorus say, "Trick or treat," and somebody would, you know, just load you up with all kinds of sweet, sugary, cavity-causing, but delicious-tasting, funky-colored candy. And so this is what we began to have for Halloween. Now, and it was a kid's, sort of an innocuous kids' festival for a while. In the 1980s, in the early 1990s, all the big movie studios began to digitize all their productions, all their backdrops, all their sceneries, all their sound effects, all this sort of stuff. So all these high-priced, highly skilled technicians who did the sceneries and the backdrops and the set designs and the sound effects, they were out of a job. Because now you could have young computer programmers do it all. So guess what happened? All these people basically turned all their skills into doing these fancy haunted houses for Halloween, beginning in the 90s and up until today. It's actually become more of an adult festival than a children's festival. So you have these fancy, elaborate haunted houses where you can pay $20 or $30, and it can take anywhere up to an hour or even an hour and a half to go through some of these things. They're open the whole month of October. So we have two brackets to the modern American fall holiday party festival season. Basically Halloween on one end and Christmas on the other. Now, question I have is, what does God think of these things? Now, we all know, this is a reminder, not going to be anything new here. There are many places in the Bible. One we'll look at is very familiar, Deuteronomy chapter 12. And you really have to at least do verses 30 and 31 to get the whole thing. He starts out, if you go a couple of verses before in Deuteronomy chapter 12, and he reminds the Israelites that he's bringing them into the land, and he's going to destroy and cut off all these nations before them, and they're going to take over their land. And in verse 30, he says, "Take heed to yourselves that you are not ensnared." You know, a snare, it's like a trap. It's something that trips you up and captivates you. "That you are not ensnared to follow them after they are destroyed from before you, and that you do not inquire after their gods, saying, 'How did these nations serve their gods? I will also do likewise.'" So God says, don't do that. And in verse 31, he says, "You shall not worship the Lord your God in that way, for every abomination to the Lord which he hates, they have done to their gods." And then, of course, he gives an example. So, and then, of course, we know you don't have to turn there, but in Jeremiah chapter 10, verses 2 through 4, it talks about don't be dismayed by the signs in the heavens and the customs of the heathens or the idolatrous worshipers, because they're vain. And the example that he gives is the decorated tree that you bring into the house. Of course, we know what the decorated tree is that people bring into their houses now. So when the churches basically took over the wild Halloween customs and reined them in and turned it into an innocuous kids' festival, they tried to take this evil and turn it into something good, something that they thought was good. Of course, Isaiah tells us, you don't need to turn here either, but it's in chapter 5, verses 20. He says, woe to those, woe to you. Look out, be careful. But woe means mean, nasty, ugly things might happen to you. Woe to those who call evil good and good evil, who put the darkness for light and light for darkness, who put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. Now, in one of the things, of course, when people do these customs, these idolatrous customs, is it hides us. It hides people from God. It takes away. It takes them away from God, from the knowledge of God. It's a counterfeit. It's a substitute. It's not godly. And in the Christmas time, especially, which people use the pagan customs, believing that they're worshiping Jesus Christ. So every once in a while, people might go to church on Christmas Day or maybe Christmas Eve, or maybe not. Every once in a while, you'll hear somebody say, well, remember the reason for the season? And they'll say, we need to figure out how to put Christ back into Christmas. And they realize that if it's supposed to be a Christian day, why is it that all those customs take everybody's minds away from God, from the Jesus whom they supposedly are worshiping? Now, let's look at 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. And if you look at the whole passage from 9 to 12, it's talking about people following to, lying signs and wonders and various other satanic sorts of things. And in verse 11, Paul tells us, he says, for this reason, God will send them strong delusions. These days are strong delusions. That they should believe the lie. They'll believe the lie instead of the truth. In verse 12, he goes on and says that they may be condemned who did not believe the truth, but had pleasure in unrighteousness. Now, you may wonder, why does God hate these days? A lot of people look at these things and say, well, it's for the kids. It's fun. I've even heard people explain it by saying, well, we have that, and they'll use passages that talks about how that God has put everything under his feet, that he eventually conquers everything, including death. And they say, we've taken these evil pagan things and we've turned them to something good. We use them to worship God. So why should he be displeased? The Bible frequently refers, and you can do a study on it. You can go for a long time. There are many scriptures where the church is described as a beautiful woman adorned in white linen, which is supposed to signify the righteous acts of the saints. And the church is considered is a woman. And the counterfeit church is referred to in the book of Revelation and other places as, depending on the translation, depending on how nice or how direct they want to be, a prostitute, a harlot, or a whore. And so she's bringing false pleasures, something that's not real, something that is a counterfeit. Let's look at Revelation 19. Where when John is being shown all these different visions, and he's talking about how the church is the bride of Christ, that Jesus is going to marry the church and there's going to be a great wedding celebration. So right now, you could probably say the church is the fiance of Jesus Christ. So chapter 19, verse 7, he says, let us be glad and rejoice and give glory. For the marriage of the Lamb has come, and his wife has made herself ready. And, of course, in the next verse, in verse 8, talks about she's clothed in the white linen. And in verse 9, it says, blessed are those who are called to the marriage supper of the Lamb. And then, of course, the last sentence of that verse, it says, these are the true sayings of God. That God has said this, this is true. There are other places now. One of the reasons that God hates these types of worship, these types of practices that come from pagan gods, pagan worship, counterfeits, he equates them with adultery. Idolatry is adultery. It's like leaving your spouse and going after prostitutes. The book of Hosea, he's told to marry a prostitute, have children by her to symbolize what Israel has done. Then I found a passage in the book of Ezekiel, which is, when you think about this, that this idolatry is like adultery. It's like the cry of an anguished husband who has been jilted by his wife who has gone after other people. Ezekiel chapter 6, and we'll look at verse 9 of Ezekiel chapter 6. And he's talking about, of course, Ezekiel wrote during the time of the captivity of Judah in Babylon, and he's talking about Judah's idolatry and prophesying what's going to happen to them. And then chapter 6 of Ezekiel, verse 9, he says, then those of you who escape these things that he's described in previous verses, will remember me among the nations where they are carried captive, because I was crushed by their adulterous heart, which has departed from me, and by their eyes, which play the harlot, or, you know, which go after prostitutes, play the harlot after their idols. They will loathe themselves for the evils which they committed in all their abominations. And then you can read on the next few verses, and verse 13, he talks about how that they shall know that I am the Lord when they are slain amongst their idols all around their altars, on every high hill, on all the mountaintops. And it goes on and on and on. So God equates these counterfeit days, these counterfeit worship practices, as prostitution. It's one of the worst things, even in our society, where anything goes, where we have legal same-sex marriage and all sorts of other crazy, weird things. Even today, even in cases where people are living together and not married, if they think they're being cheated on by their lover, it doesn't go well with them and they don't like it. So we can understand now from this why God tells us don't do these things. He says he hates them. We are supposed to be, we are the church of God, preparing ourselves to be the chaste bride of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. So, it's just a reminder, because it's everywhere. I mean, you started seeing all the stuff, all the decorations in the stores, even before September came around. It seems to get earlier every year. There's a full onslaught of everything, all the customs. They're already, Christmas commercials are on the TV now, and have been for about a week. We haven't even gotten to November. We don't even get one of the false days out of the way before they start looking forward to the next one or two or three. So let's remember to be and stay true to our God, to His ways. We had His fall holy days culminating in the Feast of Tabernacles on the eighth day far better than anything that Satan is offering the rest of the world, and that he offered us before God reached down and taught us better and called us out of it. So just remember, stay armed, stay vigilant, and stay away from all this stuff, whether it's at the office party or anywhere that your kids are facing it in schools. I imagine the Halloween decorations are probably up all over this school already, along with other really innocuous fall type things. Let's just remember, God hates it. He doesn't want us to do it. He has called us out of it. And we know what happens when people, because we know people, those of us who have been in the church a long time, we know people who went back. And now they're doing all those things they used to be called out of. Now we know what God thinks and why He doesn't like it. So let's just remember to be true to our betrothed.